Hi, this is Jenny Chamberlain, and welcome to my Southern Utah Housing Podcast. This season, we're talking about attainable housing.
Today, I'm really excited to have Mike Barbin. Am I saying your name right?
You're saying it right.
Great. Mike Barbin with the St. George Housing Authority. So can you start out by telling me and my listeners a little bit about what it is that you do at the St. George Housing Authority, maybe how you got into this work that you do? Just a little bit of background.
Sure. Yeah. So the St. George Housing Authority is a program to help with rental assistance for low-income families in the Washington County area. I started with the Housing Authority back in end of 2008. Prior to that, I worked in construction a little bit. I did a lot of the CAD work for a local trust company and traveled back and forth to Las Vegas. But after about 10 years of that, and then in 2008 with the kind of the downfall in housing, I got out of it. And the Housing Authority was hiring at the time. I was hired as the Section 8 case manager at that time. I had never done anything. I didn't even know really what the Section 8 program was or how it worked. And so I worked as the Section 8 case manager for probably 5 years and got familiar with everything and the HUD rules and regulations. Went through a couple of executive directors, and they finally asked if I would fulfill that role. And so in 2012, I became the executive director, and I've been here ever since. So it's been It's been really good. So I love helping families that need housing, especially those that are low-income families that need the assistance.
Yeah. So I saw an article that was showing how it's like a 4-year waiting list. Now, was your job easier in 2008? Like, how was it different then from how it is now?
Oh, I tell you, at that time, you know, for a one-bedroom apartment, they were going for around $500. And so in that amount of time right now for a one-bedroom, it's almost $1,112 for a one-bedroom unit. Ooh. So it has jumped over double, you know, just for a one-bedroom. And obviously the 2, 3, and 4s have gone up just as high, if not higher. So yeah, there's been a lot of changes. Obviously, with the economy the way that it is and the pay rates that are going out here in Washington County, it's definitely hard to survive just on one income. You know, if you're working for $15 an hour, $10 to $15 an hour at a local place and try to make rent on that, now you can't do that. You need multiple incomes or multiple jobs to do that. So, yes, there's been a definite change in that for sure.
Yeah. So just as a question in general about the St. George Housing Authority, is this something, like, who funds your work? Is it a federal thing? Is it a state thing? Is it city? Is it a conglomeration of a few different organizations? How do you guys get your work done?
Great question. Yeah, we are federally funded, so we are a government entity. We are a nonprofit, and we get housing assistance payments each month based on our lease-ups, and we get administration funds for each one of our clients that is leased up. We have about close to 400 Section 8 vouchers. We have 30 public housing units. These are the units here at my office where you are here now. Those are for our 62 and older individuals. And then we have, we own some duplexes as well throughout there. And then we have a lot of people that want to port from different housing authorities into St. George. So we have another, you know, 20 to 30 of those that are coming in. Just recently we were awarded, they're called mainstream vouchers. It's specifically for those that are non-elderly disabled. And then we were awarded 21 emergency housing vouchers, which were specifically for those that are homeless, experiencing homelessness, going to experience homelessness, those that are domestic violence or involved in any type of sexual trafficking. So the HUD's come out, they've with all the funding that's been coming through, and with the CARES Act, with COVID, there has been a lot of funding. There's a lot of people that have needed the assistance, and so they've been really creative in giving funding. So we do apply for as many vouchers as we possibly can when they come available. We want to help as many people in Washington County because we're one of the fastest growing cities in the nation right now.
So does St. George City's growth impact what work you're able to do? Like, as the population gets bigger, are you able to get more assistance from the federal government? Or, like, I'm just kind of curious, like, what the limitations are. Do you do anything outside of St. George City proper in the county?
So we have a lot of non-profit companies that we, or nonprofit organizations that we work closely with, Wraparound Services. We work closely with Switchpoint. We just built a 55-unit complex over by the new Smiths over off Riverside Drive. I think it was 2019, so I guess it's about 4 years now, but it took us 4 years to partner with that and to get the funding and the tax credits available. We actually project-based 8 of our Section 8 vouchers there at Riverwalk. So we definitely want to work with all of the groups, and we work closely with the Dove Center. We meet every other month. We have a local homeless coordinating committee that we meet together with. We specifically talk names of individuals that, you know, ranked from highest to lowest need. Mm-hmm. And we try to get those individuals housed first. There's a, you know, housing first model that we use here in Utah. That basically means if we can get individuals housed first, then all the other things will kind of fall into place, whether that's a job, whether that's getting their education, getting their kids in school. And so we strongly believe that if we can house somebody first, all the other things will fall into place, and hopefully they can become self-sufficient. That's the ultimate goal. So
I love that. I read a book in my graduate program called Creating Capabilities, and it talked about how housing is one of those ones that it's like a web. Like, so many other problems can be solved or significantly helped in people's individual capabilities if they have just their housing taken care of. So I love that Utah's a housing first.
Definitely.
State. That's awesome. So do you have any cool stories or anecdotes about your work that help illustrate what you guys do? I suspect there's probably some privacy things that you have to protect, but tell me the cool things about your work.
This work is rewarding. When you see someone that has made a change in their life, and when they become self-sufficient, when they get a job, it's like so exciting, you know? So we've seen that. We've seen a lot of people that have been on the program for quite a few years, and it's kind of generational, and we want to try and break that cycle. But just recently, with these 21 emergency housing vouchers, it was for homeless individuals. There's a gentleman that I was able to meet. He was actually living in a tent out in BLM. It was during this, you know, about a month ago. We were just having rainstorm after rainstorm.
Bad year for that.
And he was literally sleeping in the mud in his tent. And with these emergency housing vouchers, we were able to pull him, you know, off this list because he was one of the highest needs individuals. He had a cell phone. We were able to talk to him, bring him in. We were able to, you know, we had some past history, so we had to work closely with some of our local property management companies, and as a housing authority, we have a really good reputation with a lot of the landlords and property management companies. And, you know, we vouched and said, hey, we're going to guarantee that we'll pay the rent on this gentleman. We're going to have all the wraparound services to help him to be successful. And it's been great. So the last month he's been in his own apartment. It's just a one bedroom. He's flourishing. You know, we're working on getting a job. He does suffer a little bit from schizophrenia and some other mental issues that we're working with. But he's been able to just, you know, go from the point where he needed a lot of assistance now where he's actually on his own and he feels comfortable talking to people. Because mm-hmm. there is a big adjustment for individuals that have been living out on their own in a tent out in the desert to getting back into society and dealing with individuals and having to face individuals face-to-face and talking to a landlord and paying their portion of the rent to the landlord and, you know, paying their utility bills. There's, you know, responsibilities that come along with renting your own place. Mm-hmm. And he has to learn all that. You know, it's been a while since he's had to do that. And so we get to be able to help him fulfill those needs and work with all the other wraparound services in Washington County to help him be successful. And we'll have to have another interview a year from now, and we can report on this and see how he's doing at that point in time. But I have high hopes for him. I think he's going to do really well. I feel really good about where he's at right now. You know, it's awesome to see people make a change and want to, you know, contribute to society and get back into it and be able to get a working job and to live on their own and to, you know, mm-hmm. cook their own meals in their own kitchen and use their own bathroom and shower every single day. And a lot of us take those things for granted, you know, and you know, we have individuals that suffer from mental illness or depression or whatever they're going through. And it's difficult for them to even just wake up in the morning, let alone try to go to have a job every single day and pay their rent and to pay their utilities and have all these other responsibilities. Sometimes it's so hard for them that they just can't function. And that's sort of how they can get into the situation of being homeless.
I love that you have such a compassionate stance, because I think like I was listening to the things that you're saying of things that you can help them do. And I was like, that's just like if you're a teenager, you try, like as a parent, I want them to grow up and learn all these responsibilities. But if, say, they got off track and weren't able to do it, it's nice to have that backup net of a social program that can help them do some of those like adulting responsibilities.
Adulting, that's
we,
a word.
A lot of us, when we're practiced at them, we take it for granted. But lots of those things are actually a skill that you can build up. So cool. I'm grateful that your organization is helping people with those.
Thank you.
What else can you tell me about people that you help to find housing? Is there like a normal process that they go through in using your services? If somebody was interested in it and thought they might qualify, how would they figure all of that out?
Yeah, there is. So right now we have a waiting list that individuals need to come on. It's been closed. Like you mentioned, it's been closed for almost 3 years now. We don't anticipate it opening for at least another year. Mm-hmm. The reason being is we have all 400 of our vouchers that are currently filled. And the only way that we pull from the waiting list is when one person goes off. So most people that get a Section 8 voucher, they're on it for quite a long time, either until they graduate from the program or mm-hmm. they pass away or they get sick or they need to move in with a family member or something like that. Or they break the rules and regulations, and drugs and sexual offenses are things that would definitely terminate individuals from our program. We don't tolerate any of that. Drugs and sexual offenses are something that we want to keep a good reputation with our landlords. We don't want to send Section 8 tenants that have this type of background. So we always run backgrounds on each and every one of our clients. But the process goes like this. You get on the waiting list. Once you're on the waiting list, it's a waiting game. To qualify for the program, you do have to have, you have to be income eligible. So mm-hmm. you know, just for instance, for a single person right now, the income limits change every year. But for a single person that wanted to qualify for a program and get on our waiting list, they would need to make less than $29,050 gross annually. So that's the first thing, is you have to be income eligible. The second thing is you do have to have a preference. We require that you're either elderly, disabled, working at least 20 hours a week, or going to school full time. Mm-hmm. And so as long as you are income eligible and you have a preference, you would qualify for the program. And there's individuals that don't have a preference, and that's fine. They can still apply. They qualify income-wise, but those that do have a preference would be able to jump over them on the waiting list. And so it's important that we feel like if they're going to be on our program, they need to do something to help meet us halfway, if you want to call it that way. And so those are the preferences that we've been using ever since I've been here. And so once the individual gets to the top of the waiting list, what we do is we bring them in, we do an intake with them and verify their income. We verify that they do have a preference, and we issue them a voucher. And the voucher is good for 60 days. And we let them know that, okay, there's three people in your household, so you qualify for a two-bedroom voucher. You qualify for $1,348. That's including utilities. So here's the voucher. You go out and find the place and make sure it's within that payment standard. Once you find it, there's a landlord packet that they fill out and bring back to us that basically gives us permission to go and do an inspection on the unit. Once it passes our inspection, we're good to go ahead and help them with the rental assistance. And how it works is the tenant pays approximately 30% of their income towards the contract rent. So for instance, if an individual is making $1,000 a month and they find a place, a two-bedroom, that's good, that's $1,200, the tenant would pay $300, and the housing authority or the federal government would make up the extra $900 to pay off that rent.
Okay.
And they're responsible, you know, whatever's in that lease, they're responsible to, you know, abide by. Mm-hmm. We as a housing authority are here to kind of be that middleman if we have to get in to help the individual, but we require that the landlord and the tenant work together. But if we need to come in and work something out, we will definitely do that. But we really want the tenant and the landlord to work things out. And once they're on the program, it's their responsibility to report their income. And the goal of the program is as people get on the program, they're going to save money. So they can use that money to either go to school, they can use that money to get a better job. And ideally, when they make more money, that means they're going to pay more portion of the rent, and the housing authority will pay less rent. And so we hope that at some point they get making so much income, it takes them off and they graduate from the program. And then we can graduate from them from the program and pull the next person off the waiting list. Mm-hmm. So it's a long process, you can imagine.
Yeah. And it sounds like, I'm sure there's just like outlier demand for it. And so you can't even open your waiting list. Is it? So it's been 3 years for the current one that...
The last
it hasn't been open.
Yeah, the last time it's we hard. Opened it was September of 2020, I think it was mm-hmm. the last open it, yeah. And at that point in time, we had over 1,000 applicants, and so we
left. How many spots?
Not very many, because they're like
it's
I said,
it's probably contingent on incomes and how many you can.
Yeah, and the vouchers. Yeah. So we have about the 400 vouchers, so they're all currently filled, and so it's just as one comes available, or if we have more funding that comes our way. Mm-hmm. So the vouchers, it's a waiting game. Once you get on the waiting list, that's the ticket, and then you want to work your way up. And what we do is we purge the waiting list every 6 months, and so all the people that applied, every 6 months we'll send that letter back to them that says, hey, do you still want to be on this program? And we, you know, usually the very first purge, it cuts it in half. There's a big, because there's different people that do different situations. They may move, or they don't live at the, and they didn't let us know their new address, and so the letter gets lost in between.
Okay.
And so there is a big jump usually on every 6 months for those that you know, return their purge letters to us, because those that do, those are going to be the ones that you can see, okay, this person's going to make it to the end, because they're on the money. They bring in their purge letter every 6 months, and they make sure it's there. They're calling, hey, what number am I? Have I moved up? And so, ideally, you want them to get to the top so that we can help assist them.
So it favors the persistent and the
absolutely
the ones who are invested in getting there. That's great. So St. George and Southern Utah in particular are one of the more difficult areas as far as housing. So what are some of the unique things about Utah and Southern Utah and St. George that inform your work? Like, are there specific things that make it either more difficult or easier? Are there things about the community that kind of influence how well things go for you guys?
Well, I'm a local St. George boy, so I may be a little bit biased here, but I just think St. George is a place everybody wants to come, you know, especially in the springtime right now. It's awesome. But, you know, if you can deal with the 3 months of really hot weather and the 9 months of really good weather, that kind of offsets, and it's a good thing. So not a problem. I just feel like there's a lot of people coming in to Southern Utah right now, whether it's people that are low income or high income coming from California. They're coming in from all over. And it's because it's a great place to live. You're from here as well, I'm sure. Yeah. You know, I have the red sand in my toes. I don't think I'm ever going to go. So I think a lot of people drive through here, they vacation here, and they want to be here. Problem of it is because so many people are moving in here, the supply and demand, I mean, there's not enough rentals. And so it's in favor of the landlords and the property management companies to raise the rents. And they can take and choose and look at the applications and say, oh, let's run this person. Oh, this person has a great credit history. This person has a great job. I'm going to take the cream of the crop. Well, where does that leave some of our low-income friends and those that are working hotel jobs at $10, $15 an hour, working fast food, and they're trying to find housing? And so what's happening is you're getting people that are doubling up. There's 2 and 3 families in a unit. You know, they're right there about a year and a half ago when the housing market, you could buy a home and it was you could have someone buy it for $200,000 or $300,000 more than what you bought it for. And so a lot of the rentals were being bought up from those, and so they were the tenants were being kicked out of their homes because they were selling the units, and then there were no rentals. There wasn't enough rentals for these individuals. And so that's the problem. Where we would love to see the community come together is we have so many builders. Construction is a huge
an industry.
It is a great industry. And so what we would love to have happen is these builders, you know, build these 200 unit complex, and maybe they save 10% of those. So maybe they give us they save 20 of those 200 units for specifically those that are low income families based off these incomes that HUD has given to us. That's an idea that's out there.
So do you know a lot about, cuz I know there's the low income housing tax credits. Did those ever impact your work, or is that something that's more in other bigger cities? I'm just curious, because I do feel like one of the challenges is the building industry, because of course the more high income people that move in, that's who they want to serve, because that's where their profit margins are higher. Whose role do you think it is to try to encourage builders? Like, do we just need to appeal to their conscience, appeal to their better nature? Is it the city's role to kind of push them? Like, how do you think we can do that?
That is the million-dollar question, Jenny.
It's the 1,000-a-month question. Yeah.
I wish I had an answer for that. I mean, there's some great ideas that are out there. We do have a lot of great construction companies that do want to help, that want to work with us. We have property management companies that do want to work.
And who do you like best in our county? Give them a plug. Oh. Like, who are the good property management companies
oh my
that
gosh.
Have a heart?
Utah Property is a great one that I love to work with. They really want to work with us. They've actually showed up to some of our Utah local homeless coordinator meetings and just trying to get ideas of where we can help out with. They're amazing. We have so many that are out there. There's Jensen Property Management. There's Real Property Management that are really good. I'm leaving so many out right now, but I feel like as a housing authority, we do have a good reputation. They do want to work with us because mm-hmm. we're guaranteed rent. We're going to pay them our portion, and it's high incentive for the tenant to pay their portion. Otherwise, they're going to be taken off the program for not following the rules and regulations. And so,
that makes sense.
If we had more vouchers, it would probably be more beneficial for a lot of these, you know, because it's not a high risk working with the housing authority. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wish we had. Let me just put a plug into the city of St. George as well. Mayor Pike and, you know, our new mayor now, Michelle Randall, have been awesome to work with. Jimmy Hughes is a great council, and he's on our board here. He's amazing to work with. But the only reason we were able to get the Riverwalk, which was a 55-unit complex, is because the city of St. George actually donated that property. So to make it all work out, to make all the numbers work out, to make it affordable for everyone, there had to be some giving and taking there. And of course, all the wraparound, we had to help out with the Section 8 vouchers and Project Basin. We had to be, you know, to get these tax credits, you have to be so close to a supermarket and to a mm-hmm. bus stop, and you have to, and so the land and where you build these are really critical
super
too.
Valuable. Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
we're competing with these tax credits with up north with a lot of the other bigger cities that are closer and the bus systems are bigger. So there's a lot that plays into effect to these tax credit units. We have, you know, Adams Construction are awesome to work with here in St. George. I mean, they work with us really, really well, and they build amazing properties that are, they upkeep them. You know, sometimes Section 8 gets a bad reputation that, oh, I don't want Section 8 in my neighborhood. Well, go look at some of these tax credit units like what Adams Construction has built. They are amazing. Their upkeep is amazing. The grass and the yards look amazing. Inside, they make sure that everything is passing inspections and working really, really well. And
I've heard good things about that one in particular, mm-hmm. and a few of the new ones that have been done, that they just look good, and you yeah. can't, and sometimes it's a mix of low income plus regular, and it's just a great neighborhood. I keep hearing good things about it.
Yes, those are great projects. I agree.
Yeah. Well, to wrap up, I just want to hear your opinions on, like, what are the best practices for affordable housing, and what is the public versus the private role in solving the problems of affordability in Washington County?
I think the first and foremost is Washington County needs to know that, yeah, there is an issue. I mean, not everybody can afford housing. Yeah, not everyone can buy their own home. Not everybody can afford rent. And we need these individuals that are working some of these lower-end jobs, if you want to call it lower-end jobs, but there's nothing wrong because it's
working
a job.
Class.
It's
yeah.
a working class. They have to go out and If we don't help these low income families that are working these jobs, how are we going to have the bigger, you know, how are we going to run the hotels? How are we going to run the restaurants? How are we going to run all of the minor things that do the dirty work? These individuals that are doing all the hard work, we need to have them understand that if we don't help house them and make it affordable for them, their business isn't going to flourish. And so it takes all of us working together. I think, you know, We work closely with Switchpoint. I mean, homelessness is an issue here in St. George. It really is. You just have to go out to the BLM and you can see. I mean, my friend that was living out in the, you know, we helped him get off out of the tent into a place. But it they're out there, and they need assistance and they need help. And a lot of it is the housing first. If maybe they need medication so that we can get them housed. We need to get them into to doctors to get them on the right medication so that they can function properly, so they can get a job, so that they can go to school mm-hmm. and be successful. And so yeah. I think as a community, we just need to come together. We really need to look and say, there is an issue here. St. George is a beautiful place. How can we help one another? How can we be kind? How can we be loving and do the best that we can and do our part to help somebody find housing or find a job or whatever that might be to help them become self-sufficient?
Cool. Well, thank you so much. Are there any other questions that I didn't ask that I should have about about your work or housing in St. George?
I think we got them all. Thanks so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. And I hope this, you know, opens some eyes here in Washington County and St. George, and we can all come together and help these low-income families and find housing and help them become successful.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the work you do. I really appreciate it.
And Thank you.
I'm sure the people who you serve appreciate it too.
Awesome. Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you for listening to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. I hope you'll think about subscribing and give the podcast a review if you found it valuable. If you have feedback or ideas to make this podcast better, check out my website, jennychamberlain.com, and leave me a message there.